Aloha, everyone. My name is Christina Lainey Mitri, and I'm your host. And welcome to Smart Living Hawaii's podcast, where we discuss smart homes and technology, sustainability, healthy lifestyles, and smart business. Today, we're going to continue our Sustainable Leaders series, and we're going to have a talk story with Rebecca Sterin, and she's the founder of High Res Grant Writing and Consulting. So we will learn about the world of grant writing and what it takes for sustainable nonprofits to secure grants and funding. Aloha, Rebecca.
Aloha, Christina.
Thanks for joining us today. I do call her Becca. So if I happen to say Becca throughout this, Rebecca, she's okay with both, just to let you know. But before we begin, I just wanted to say a little bit more about Becca. And she began her career in a small Connecticut restaurant and was immediately hooked on feeding people. She attended Johnson and Wales University, earning a bachelor's degree in both culinary arts and nutrition. And during this time, she participated in a term abroad in Singapore and Thailand, doing an intense study of Southeast Asian cuisines. And it was here where she fell in love with international cuisine, spicy foods, and travel. So maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that. My parents just got back from Thailand. After over 20 years in various facets of the food service industry, Rebecca decided it was time for a change. However, her passion still remained in food and feeding people. So Rebecca formed High Res Grants Writing and Consulting to help bring her passion for food and sustainability to organizations and communities on a larger scale. Through grant writing, she discovered that she can take the knowledge and experience she's amassed over the years and help communities in ways that she never imagined before. She's very passionate about food literacy and expanding access to healthy foods for everyone through improved food systems, hands-on education, and sustainable farming and gardening programs. So this is where we've met. We've met through our Eco Rotary Club of Kaka'ako, and we do all sorts of things in this genre, I would say. And we work together on a lot of these things for the community, and everybody's welcome to join us. So let's dive in. Let's talk about your background. Where are you from before you came to Hawaii?
So I'm from the East Coast originally. I grew up in Connecticut and went to school at Johnson & Wales in Rhode Island. So I did a lot with food out there and cooking in the culinary world. And then, you know, frankly, it's just really cold out there. So I needed a change, and I needed somewhere where I could feel my fingers and my toes, and, you know, move to Hawaii.
Well, did you start in Kauai, or?
I started in Kauai, yeah. I moved to Kauai originally, lived there for about 4 years. And while I was there, COVID happened. So everything kind of just got upended, you know, everything shut down, and there was just a whole lot of time to pursue new passions.
So that's kind of where I wanted to go to next, was how did you, from food and the food industry and your culinary experiences, what brought you into grant writing? Like, how did it like just come about in your mind?
Well, so like I said, I was on Kauai and COVID happened and we locked down pretty hard. And so during that time, you know, we were all getting a little stir crazy. And a friend of mine was like, hey, let's learn a skill. We got to do something with ourselves. We're turning to mush. So we kind of each went online and we're looking for things to learn through library courses and just kind of see what's out there. You know, I've been in the food service industry for over 20 years at that point and was looking for a change anyway. And this just seemed like a really great opportunity. So I had come across grant writing and looked a little into it and thought, wow, this seems pretty cool. This seems pretty interesting. I like writing. I like that, you know, there's a structure to grant pursuits. It's not just open-ended storytelling, but it's pointed storytelling. And thought it looked kind of neat and was at a birthday party and met a woman who is a grant writer. And just the way she spoke about how much she loved her job, how passionate she was, how excited she was every day to be able to help organizations move their missions forward and in turn help communities and help people through her ability to, you know, through technical writing. And just with how passionate she was, I left that party that night and went home and signed up for grant writing classes because I was just like, okay, I had seen this. It sparked a little bit in me, but just hearing her speak was like, yes, I have to. So I took a few free online library classes and was like, this is great. And was like, I really want to get further into this. So I ended up signing up for a course online with learngrantwriting.com and became a grant writer through there. And now I am a part of an amazing community called the Global Grant Writers Collective. And there's members all over the world with all kinds of different backgrounds and experience. And so I'm now able to help people in my community with the backing of hundreds of other grant writers and people who have been in this industry for years and been industry leaders. And, you know, that's something that's just so special, I think, to have all of that knowledge myself and then have all of the people behind me who, if I don't know something, I can go to them and they've got my back. So it's a really great path that I found through COVID.
Yeah, well, over my 15, 20 years of working with nonprofits, it's definitely one of those things where it's based off of funding that really makes or breaks that nonprofit. You know, like if they have too little bit funding, they don't survive. If they have too much funding, they need to know how to survive. And there's just a threshold of like, if you're in this bracket and you make this amount of money, what you can, where you can really get and what you can do with it. And then when you hit this other threshold and you're, you know, now in this bracket, you have to have a lot more, you know, employees, and you've got a lot more expenses that go out the door, and you have just a lot of more accountability, and all of that costs money. I mean, it's running a business, but you're not necessarily always providing a service that, you know, pays. So it's like having to get these funds and finding a way to get them on a consistent basis is huge for the nonprofits and for people to understand like how to do this, how to make this happen for their business and, you know, or their nonprofit. So maybe we can jump into, let's see, how about just, I think when I started jotting down some questions of like, what exactly do you think of when you think of grant writing, I think, or questions to have, I think the first thing is like, where do you find grants? Where would anybody go on to look? And this is really like, I'm not saying like all of a sudden nonprofits are going to just like, you know, new nonprofits trying to find money, they're just going to like be able to just go and find grants and it's easy. But just in general, so people kind of have a better idea, where do you find them?
So a good place to start is looking into your local community foundations. There's a lot of, you know, smaller groups that work through these community foundations that put grants out that are managed by the foundation. And especially as a small nonprofit, you know, you can approach the foundation leaders, your community foundation leaders, and they can also help steer you to grants that may be appropriate for you. There's also a lot of state and county grants that come out that are usually listed within the government websites. And then I think my favorite place is through databases like Instrumental or GrantWatch, where they kind of just take all the grants that are out there and put them into one database, and you can input your project and get a pretty substantial list back, which, you know, takes a lot of filtering and knowing what you're looking for, but it'll show you at least and reaffirm that there are options out there for almost anything. So it takes some digging, and that's something that a lot of nonprofits don't necessarily have the time to do, but there are things out there, and that's, you know, sometimes where a grant writer or someone like, you know, myself and my team can come into play, because we can dig through that for you. It can definitely be an intimidating process, I think, for a new nonprofit, but if you just approach it in a logical manner and put one foot in front of the other, and, you know, don't try to go for that giant federal grant, you're just starting out, you know, it's not as intimidating of a process as sometimes I think it feels like to newer or smaller nonprofits.
Yeah. And then when you do this, is it kind of like a resume? I've never had to write a grant, or I've never looked into writing a grant, so I'm very naive to this area as well. But is it like, once you start doing this, you're able to then use a lot of the stuff you've had from previous, you know, grant submissions, that you'll be able to like piecemeal things depending on what it is you're going for? Is it kind of like that? Kind of like build a
absolutely, you know,
good content for yourself.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's something that is great when you sit down and you really do your grant planning before you start your pursuits, and kind of getting really clear on what your mission is, what your project is, who you're helping, and why you're helping them. You know, just because it's a great idea, or it's something that you could see the community benefiting from, you also have to be able to demonstrate to a funder that there's a negative impact of not funding you, of not giving you the money to move your mission forward. You know, for instance, if you're looking to get funding to help supply milk to school children because you're in a super rural area and the kids don't have access to it, it's just too expensive, or, you know, you can't get the supply into your rural area and you're looking to fund bringing, you know, milk into the area for the kids, can you show that the kids are currently negatively impacted without this? You know, is there something where it's like, yeah, you know, our kids, they're not healthy, they're not growing as much, you know, and we need to get this because we can't afford it otherwise. So you want to be able to show that there's a reason you're doing this project, and there's a direct benefit to getting the funding for this project. And without it, you know, you're not serving your community as best you can. So funders really want to be able to see how their money is going to improve your community versus just, well, that's a great idea and we like it, here's some money for it. You know, that's part of it, but what is that project going to bring? How is that money going to eventually impact your community and show the funder?
Data has, I'm sure, a lot to do with it too. If you're able to provide data, right?
Yeah.
That's really helpful. So I guess what is the steps that you would say, you did mention bringing up a plan. Could you talk or walk us through, like, if you were to have someone that came to you to start, like, what is the process that it takes to get into, whether you're working with a grant writer or what you need to do to get started, you know, with a plan and everything?
So there's some things that you want to definitely think about as far as grant readiness goes. The first being, you know, are you a 501c3? Are you a registered, you know, can you receive funds if you were to be awarded for them? Most of the times, funders do want you to have your own 501c3 status. There are exceptions where, you know, people can work with fiscal sponsors, which is essentially a smaller nonprofit or a newer nonprofit partnering with a more established entity that has the 501c3 status to help them manage the funds and just do the reporting. And it helps the funder see that somebody with an established track record for managing money is willing to support this project and say, yes, we're on board with this and we'll put our name on this. So you want to make sure that you've kind of done your paperwork with the government and gotten your 501c3 status. And then funders are also going to want to see a track record of managing money. So if you got your 501c3 status yesterday, you're probably not going to get a grant if you applied for it tomorrow. Typically, it's a 2 to 3 year window that they want to see that you've been accepting funds and managing it properly and doing what you said you would do with them and following up with your reporting. So it's often good for a smaller nonprofit to start with some of the smaller grants that just builds that level of credibility for a funder for when you want to go after the bigger grants. Funders also don't necessarily want to be the only dollars supporting your organization. You know, they want to see that you have either some program income or other funders or donors that are supporting your organization in the community and supporting what you do and that are behind you, because it just helps to see, okay, yeah, like this does have some traction. This does have some lifeblood in it. This will go on beyond my donation. This program will continue. So fundraising and having ongoing donors is definitely something that helps funders when you're putting in a grant application. They also want to see if you are serving clients. You know, are you at the stage where you just have a really great idea and you filed all your paperwork, but you're not doing anything yet? You know, they want to see that you're already, the wheels are in motion and that your program is not wholly dependent on if they write a check or not, that you are able to move forward and serve clients. And, you know, like you had mentioned before, having some data to back that up. You know, funders love data and being able to say, yes, we're serving X amount of people through this program. And with your dollars, we can serve 20% more in the next year. You know, those are things that funders are like, okay, they have a plan. They have a plan and a track record. And you know, they also want to see that you have a board that's involved and staff, and even if it's just yourself, you know, running the nonprofit, do you have an active volunteer base? Do you have active community support? You know, do you have relationships with other organizations in your community? Because a lot of times funders are going to want to support organizations that are working with other organizations in the community to make something happen, you know, so they can help make the maximum impact by kind of spreading their dollars in that way. So those are definitely some things to consider.
When you create like a strategic plan for a nonprofit, what does that look like? Like, I guess, is it a strategic grant writing?
Well, just so
plan for funding or?
Yeah, we create funding strategies for organizations. And that is what we do is we will meet with an organization, typically like a new client, and get all of their program information, their organization information, you know, what are they looking to do? What are they already doing? And then once, you know, we get all that information, we go back to our database and kind of input all that. And, you know, our favorite database is Instrumental, and it's just got so many grants in it. You know, usually when you input a project, you'll get over 200 options, and not all of them are great fits. Some of them, you know, it's just an algorithm and based on the keywords. So some of them are immediately like, no, that's totally left field. But there's a lot of grants that are, you know, a maybe. And so we will take that list and go through each one and assess, you know, is this a good fit for your organization based on things like eligibility and the timeline and, you know, the level of funding that you're looking for. For instance, if you need $1 million, it's probably not worth your time to be looking at $5,000 grants, you know, unless you're trying to build a relationship with a larger funder that, you know, this is how you're going to get your foot in the door. But so we take all of that into consideration, and then we will whittle those grants down to, you know, about 15 or so, 10 to 15 usually, based on eligibility, based on program alignment. And we also will check the competitiveness of a grant. There's a lot of really great programs out there that, you know, come up in a lot of searches. And there's even one specifically I can think of that I just get so excited for. And I love how clear they make it on their website with what's been awarded and everything. And the reality is it's got less than 5% chance of winning, you know, because they get so many applications. So we will take that, you know, we'll take the list and kind of contact funders or determine the competitiveness of a grant and look for grants that have typically around at least a 20% chance of award is generally the number we go for. Sometimes a little bit lower, you know, we'll look at if it's something like a federal grant. But typically 20% is what we shoot for. So once we get that list, we'll, you know, it narrows it down a bit further. And then the final product is we come up with a roadmap for the next 12 to 18 months for your organization of like, here are the best fit grants for you to pursue. You know, we've got about a 20% chance of winning, the program's in alignment, and this is what you should go after. And, you know, having this document in hand is really helpful for organizations to avoid the haphazard pursuit of, well, it came in my inbox, let's go for it, you know, and you add all those up over time, and that just, it's a lot of time. So this, a funding strategy helps buy back, you know, an organization or an executive director's time where they don't have to sift through grant RFPs until their eyes cross and then try and contact funders and see if they have a shot. And so we found that this can be a really helpful way to get, you know, time back for the organization and also alleviate a lot of the stress of, oh gosh, what are we going to go for? What are we going to do in December? What are we going to do for next year? So it's not just a last minute putting out fires and trying to pursue things.
I see. So I've been working with a lot of different companies over the years and nonprofits, but what I'm also finding is within the sustainable world, that's kind of like the area that I've been working with. There's a lot of really good companies that are out there doing good work, but they're for profit. You know, I know we were chatting with a few of them, and I've connected you with them. And how do we go about, I mean, because what these people are doing and the innovation that they have, like, I'm just going to throw out there David Sands and the bamboo, building with bamboo. You know, you can definitely check out that podcast that we have if anybody wants to learn more about their mission and what they're doing. But like, I mean, I know that they have, you know, like the X Prize, for example, from Elon Musk, right? It's like a business funding type of model. So, you know, this is an innovation. This is, I guess, under the category of sustainability and what some people may, you know, open nonprofit for, but they decided to go down the route of business. Like, how is there funding for this? And is that something that you also help with? Or do you solely, like, strictly just work with funding that's for nonprofits?
There's definitely funding out there for for-profit businesses. It can sometimes be a little bit harder to find, or you have to take a little bit more of a creative approach. For instance, building a partnership with a nonprofit, you know, so that they are the one that's receiving the funds, and then you're working with them and doing the work and benefiting, you know, from the funds and being able to be, you know, paid from there. But there's definitely a lot of things out there. And sometimes in the government, you know, sector where they're looking for partners that have the capital to make the impact, like a for-profit business, you know, they'll put something out there, for example, sustainable building that, you know, for-profit entities can apply for. But there's definitely creative ways to get funds for for-profits, especially, you know, in the sustainability field. And again, through building community partnerships, you know, is really, you can really get a lot done that way. And you can definitely help out the for-profits as well.
Would you say that there is an increase, like a high amount of funds out there now for sustainable nonprofits and things in this space, more so than before? Just because of, I guess, the new laws and climate change and all that stuff. Is there a lot more money out there, would you say?
I definitely think there is a lot more money out there for sustainable projects and renewable energy and green building and, people that are looking to make the system greener as a whole, to convert into renewable energy and bring that to the masses more and make it less of a niche thing and make it more, bring sustainability into everyday life. I definitely think there's a lot more money that's out there for that. And being able to recapture carbon and work with, forest lands and how to just get all of that into the mainstream right now. And I think that's definitely a trend that is happening.
Yeah, and I mean, when it comes to renewable energy, there's money involved, right? I mean, you make money off of it. So I could see investors putting money into it. I can see it an easier route to get money, I mean, get funding for these things because the return's going to be there. But diving back, because I really want to like gear this back towards your passion of food. This is one area that I feel we are hurting the most when it comes to sustainability is our food security. Because if you look at it, there is no money in our food. Like, there's no money. It's not like renewable energy where it's gonna, you can tell an investor, boom, this is gonna make us so much money. It's more of like, it's gonna cost us money to feed people, and it's gonna cost us even more money to feed people locally, and it's gonna cost even more money to feed them organic local, right? So there's no point in all of this where it's like, this is a good investment for somebody to be putting into. It's more of like, how can we obtain funds and grants, right, to actually see this through for those that are in need and those that need to have food and they can't afford it, right? Or healthy food or local food and they can't afford it. Or how can we make Hawaii sustainable and be growing more food and providing food here in the state versus, us having to import? So this is like, I mean, I know I had Albie on not too long ago, and we've had different podcasts on food security and things, but now I'm talking about funding because it's like, where are we going to get this money to solve this problem? Do you find that there are grants out there for food security now? I guess it would be in the farming industry and in these spaces where it's not like, I guess how the current farming industry is in the United States that we all talk about, right? And how the government is funding them on that type of mono, cropping and all that kind of thing. And it's more like these smaller farmers and local farmers. I don't know the ins and outs, but I was curious as to what on that side.
Yeah, I definitely think that food security is, a hot topic, and especially in Hawaii, since we import, over 90% of our food. And so it's something that, like you said, is kind of tricky because it's not profitable to move away from these large corporations and try and localize your food system and encourage people to have backyard gardens and be able to grow a portion of their food. And I think that some of the way that nonprofits can help impact that is knowledge. I think depending on your area, I mean, Hawaii, we're super fortunate because everything grows and grows all the time, and people are used to kind of the lushness of it. I've worked with organizations that, work kind of in inner city Oakland, and, those kids have not seen a lemon on a tree or a carrot in the ground. And, to me, it blows my mind, and but I think there are a lot of people out there that don't know and don't even think about where their food comes from. It just shows up on the shelf. And so getting from that to transitioning into, wait a minute, I can grow all my kale, I can grow all my herbs even, and make my food that much better and make me want to cook at home. I think it all, ties in together. And some of the first part of that is being able to make that an everyday normal, you know, bringing kids into school gardens and showing them how to compost and how to grow their own food. And even if it's just a little bean plant, like they're so happy that they did this thing and they can throw those three green beans in with their dinner tonight and look what they did, you know. And it's just, I think that that's really where nonprofits are doing great at starting to like show people where their food comes from and show them that you don't need 100 acres of land to grow your own food. You know, a couple of big deep pots on your lanai will get you some tomatoes and peppers, you know? And so being like, that's, I think, where you kind of start to localize your food system as far as like, wait, no, we don't need to get, why would we get avocados from Mexico? We live in Hawaii. They're falling off the trees and feeding chickens and pigs. Why can't we eat those avos, you know? So there's definitely a lot of money in the food security, you know, grant world right now and sustainability grant world to kind of implement programs like that and support smaller farms and, you know, community garden programs, school garden programs that are teaching people how to be more sustainable in their own lives, you know, for themselves and their families.
Yeah, and changing the mindset, right? Starting with the kids so you can break cycles or create new cycles. I always believe that at the end of the day, I mean, I don't know if there's any way to fix some people that have gone down a road so far. It's like, sometimes all we can do is work with the kids. Like,
you know, and they get so excited.
We have to start with the kids that are just absorbing and learning right now, and hopefully it sinks in. But
absolutely.
Let's see. Where do you normally, or where do your clients come from? Like, where do you, and maybe if you want to share some stories or, you know, people that you've helped along the way, you can, here's a time to do that, you know, feel free.
So I've gotten, you know, some clients through just kind of networking and informational interviews and getting out there and contacting nonprofit leaders and just being like, I love what you do. Can we sit down and talk? And, you know, through those conversations, I've been able to learn a lot about various facets of what nonprofits are doing and where they're working and how they're working. And also, you know, when talking to them, see like what are your biggest obstacles when it comes to grants, you know. And I've spoken with people who are just kind of like, I don't have time. And when I look at an RFP, nothing about reading a 70-page technical government document lights me up. I don't want to do it. My eyes cross and I throw it in the trash. So I think that, you know, through talking to people and kind of seeing like, is there an opportunity where I can bring my skill set to help your skill set succeed? You know, one of my favorite clients is actually Maui Food Bank, and I've been working with them for a while. And, you know, when the fires happened, I was just so thankful to like have that relationship and be able to contact their executive director, who is amazing, and be like, if you need anything, I'm 100% here. Like, let's do this. And so the work that we've done over the past couple of years together has already been awesome and helped the food bank grow and help them, you know, get further in their mission. And now, since the Maui fires, you know, they were there on the ground before FEMA or anybody else. They were there immediately serving people, and, you know, they're there helping coordinate the food efforts and just the efforts of recovery that the county needed to all of a sudden, you know, there's so much going on that they've been able to really be a pillar of the community and help lead some of the government agencies as far as like, this is going to be how you can get to the most people. Like, this is, we're going to help you and we're going to be able to supply. And I think working with them is so amazing. And,
I'm so grateful for them. And they don't have time to sit there and figure out how technically to get the money and all that stuff, right? So it's
exactly.
Like,
exactly. It
do all that. So they can do their jobs, right. And they can do their mission is
exactly.
I think, important.
And it feels so good. And I'm so, like I said, I'm so glad that we had that relationship prior to this, because it was, you know, when it came to let's write this grant, you know, let's get this, let's get that. I already know their program. I already know kind of what they're doing. I have their stats. I've seen what they've been doing over the past few years. And so on my end, it just makes it easier to put a proposal together and have all the data and have all the okay ways you've grown, because like I've been there right along the way to help in some of them. So the relationship building of it is really great, and I'm really proud of what they do. I think it's
I
awesome.
also think too that's a huge benefit just after, speaking with you for a while and talking about different things is when I do have someone and I'm like, oh, they need to talk to Becca, it's like for you're going through grants every day and like filtering through all these that come in and you just like there's just because it's top of mind and you've been going through newsletters or you've seen these things and they're coming, you're like, oh, these people should apply for this. They totally fit this, and it's like it's one of those things where it's like we would never know or that organization would never know about the funding that they could get from here. But because it's across your computer every day, you're in it and you're seeing it, it's like it's so easy to just relate it, right? So when you do get or you're in or, maybe just meeting with a lot of these nonprofits and learning about what they do, not to say that they may be your clients yet, but just the fact that it's there, it's in the back of your head then, right? That it's like you're like a Rolodex, like it's right there thinking like, oh my gosh, we should talk to them because this grant's perfect for them. And I think at the end of the day, it's almost like when I think of kids who are applying for college and they are needing to get scholarships. I mean, there's so many scholarships out there for kids to apply for, and they're all based on different things like their ethnicity or the different, things that they're involved in. And it's a matter of learning what those are and, how to apply for them, which, by the way, just a little pitch here, Eco Rotary does have a $5,000 student scholarship that kids can apply for, and we don't usually have very many applicants. So if anybody's listening to this, we have, I think it's, I'm not too sure when it's due, but it's coming up, and it's like $5,000 for kids that are going into college or graduating. I think they're seniors graduating, so just why I reach out to Eco Rotary about it.
Yeah, definitely. As someone with student loans, find every dollar you can get. And
And it's
if you're
out
into
there, and
sustainability, absolutely.
you don't have to be like the top of your class. It's like, to win all of these different things, these options. But, anyhow, I think we covered a lot. Is there anything else that is kind of lingering in your mind that you would love to share with the listeners by any chance before we close out?
I think we did cover a lot, and that, you know, my advice to listeners would be to kind of know your programs, be prepared, know your why. You know, why are you doing what you do? Why are you working with the population you work with? You know, why is this going to impact your community? And being able to really answer all of those questions from a bunch of different angles, because grant writing can sometimes feel a bit repetitive, where you're re-answering the same question with slightly different turn. And so you really have to be clear from all angles on what you're doing, why you need the funds, and how it's going to impact your community in a positive way.
Well, how, I guess before we close out, how can our listeners reach you if they want to ask you more questions, maybe set up a meeting perhaps, because it sparked some interest.
All
What's the
right.
best way to reach you? How about your Instagram? Do you want to share your Instagram, your
Yep.
website, email?
So on Instagram, you can DM me at hi_res_grantwriting. I also have a website, www.hi-resgrants.com, or you can email me at write@gmail.com, or info@hi-resgrants.com.
So I will have all that information on the verbiage. So if anybody didn't catch that, don't worry. You can go to the verbiage part of the podcast. So I guess that's it for today. Thank you guys so much. Please do check us out at www.smartlivinghawaii.org. You can look up the podcast there, or you could go to any podcast platform to listen to this one and on YouTube. So thanks so much. Until next time, live smart.
Thank you.